And then Hayes turned it over at the line. Back the other way in a partial break for Stahl. Cutting toward the net. Left it for Marinkin. Got it. Score. Bouncing puck. Stahl did everything he could to try to take the Winnipeg Jets defenseman out of the play and left it there for Parisi, who dashed in uncontested from the top of the circles and drives it past Comrie, and it's 2-0 Minnesota.
Howdy, folks. It's NHL This Week with the Legal Curve on TSN Radio 1290. We hope you enjoyed our Manitoba Moose coverage. Huge Moose win. They remain in fourth in the Central Division as they continue their playoff push. Sorry, third place in the Central Division. They've passed Iowa after picking up that big win over the Bakersfield Condors. Sean Assor and Ezra Ginsberg. Drew Mandel is away from the program this week. He'll be back next week, though. And I should mention that next week is our playoff preview show. It's actually not going to be next Wednesday. It's going to be next Tuesday from 7 to 10. It's unbelievable, Sean. We only have 3 days left in the regular season after tonight.
It feels like just yesterday or like last week we were sitting in that studio going through our season preview show and we were, you know, saying our ridiculous predictions and our hilarious takes on what we thought the season would hold for us. And here we are, totally wrong and ready for the playoffs.
This time next week, of course, we're going to be watching the start of the 2019 Stanley Cup playoffs. And I hope you like the number 96. 96, as in both the Jets and the Predators have 96 points. And if you were watching the game between the St. Louis Blues and Chicago Blackhawks tonight, the Blackhawks doing the Jets a big favor, winning in the shootout. Of course, Winnipeg's Jonathan Toews gets the shootout winner. And if you weren't watching that game, the Hawks were up late in that game, and Bozak tied it up with about 30 seconds left in the game. The Blues pick up a point, so the Blues are at 95 points. Updated Central Division standings. The Jets and Preds are tied at 96 points, but the Jets, of course, have the tiebreaker, more regulation wins. So the Jets are right now in first in the Central, and there's a plethora, Sean, of different situations here. I mean, the Jets win out, and they're good. They're going to finish first, and they're going to get home ice advantage for the next two rounds, the first two rounds of the playoffs, of course. And I want to get into that later, but let's go back to last night's game between the Minnesota Wild and the Winnipeg Jets. Obviously a very disappointing game, and we have to talk about the players-only meeting. Mike McIntyre, Ken Wiebe, they tweeted it out. 23 minutes passed before the media got into the Jets' dressing room. Only Blake Wheeler, the captain, talked after the game. So let's hear from Blake Wheeler. Let's hear his comments from after the game last night, and then we're going to talk about yesterday's game and basically what the team is dealing with right now.
Well, we've run into some pretty good competition here down the stretch, and you know, we want to be playing our best hockey this time of year, and we're not quite there yet. So, you know, when it comes down to that, you want to get a team on the same page. You want to get every guy pulling on the rope the same direction. Sometimes the best therapy for that is having a conversation about it.
Yeah, that's not something that's happened before this season, or teams felt the need to have a meeting of this kind until now?
No, we do it, I mean...
post-game?
Do it a handful of times every year, probably. Like I said, you know, you got to talk. You got to talk about it. We're a group of guys individually that each bring something unique to the table. Each are unique in our personalities, and you know, you hold things in. Nothing gets figured out. So it's good. It's good to talk.
Did you like what you heard? What you heard?
Well, you know, it's easy to say the right things. You know, I think there's always a quality to what guys are saying. Everything that we talk about is, you know, really heartfelt, and so I think it's a good step in the right direction.
That was Jets captain Blake Wheeler after last night's disappointing 5-1 loss to the Minnesota Wild. Shawnee, let's get right into these comments because we've been talking about it all day long here on the station, and obviously we're on late night here, so we get to put a bow and wrap up, you know, the aftermath of last night's 5-1 loss. But you know, Jets are down 3-0, three goals on nine shots. A really tough night for Eric Comrie. you know, in place of Connor Hellebuck, who gets a night off, second game of a back-to-back. Zach Parise scores those two goals in a 3 minute and 12 second span. The Jets have lost five of their last seven games. You're coming off of that disappointing loss on Saturday night at home to the Montreal Canadiens, a game in which, you know, the Montreal Canadiens needed to keep their playoff hopes alive. So let's start off with Wheeler's comments, because that's a player right there that you can tell is not happy with the way his team is playing, and you can tell that those Jets were talking about something a little bit more than just the result of last night's game. They were talking about where this team is at right now heading into the playoffs.
There's so many things to try to talk about with just this one situation. I mean, you like to hear it, right? You're happy that the team is holding a players-only meeting. You know, it's not a film study session. It's not a coach's meeting. This is the players taking it upon themselves to hash out what is wrong, or at least what they feel is wrong, maybe on an individual level for some teammates as well as a team, and the structure and the lack thereof that we've seen as of late. I mean, listen, I love the comments that Blake Wheeler said. You know, nothing changes if you hold it in. Results don't happen if you don't talk. And these guys are mature. They're proud athletes. Sometimes, you know, ego can get the better of people, and you just, we're fine. We'll go to the playoffs. We'll flip the switch and everything will be fine. You know, it'll be the team that you saw against Nashville. But sometimes that's not the case. And sometimes you need to air the dirty laundry. You need to get it out on the table, talk about it. Maybe have someone say a little something a bit critical of your game and hear something that you know, that doesn't sound too terrific or sound too encouraging. But when you reflect on what you've heard, you know, perhaps a lot of guys looked in the mirror after that players only meeting, and some self-assessment and some self-evaluation took place last night.
You know, Sean, you just mentioned in your answer flipping the switch. And I think that's something that I think a lot of players in the Jets dressing room right now are thinking about, based on the way they've played, not just the last week or 2 weeks, the last 3 months, really, because this team has been a 500 team since early January, since the Christmas break, and a team in the Jets that looked like they had first wrapped up a month or so ago, or at the very least, you didn't think that there was a possibility that they were going to fall into third place in the Central Division. Now you look at the situation, and we talked about it, the Blues pick up a much needed point. Obviously they would have liked to have the extra point, but you know, Johnny Toews made sure that St. Louis was only leaving that game with 1 point. But if the Jets win out, they're fine. I mean, the Blues are not going to finish any higher, and the Jets are guaranteed to finish first. But when you talk about some of the losses as of late, and we talked about, you know, the game against the Montreal Canadiens, the Jets just didn't play very well. But when you look back at the game against the New York Islanders, we know the Islanders tied it up late, and then they scored the game-winning goal late in the third period. You look back, you know, a couple of weeks, the game against the Vegas Golden Knights, the last game of that road trip, the Jets defeated the Kings, they defeated the Ducks, but they laid an egg in the second game of a back-to-back. And I think that's what's concerning is, when the Jets start to get some momentum going and they pick up a couple of wins, or they pick up a big win like they did two nights ago against the Chicago Blackhawks in overtime, you thought, okay, they're going to win the game against the Wild, and you know they're not going to have to worry about possibly dropping down to third place, right? So at the end of the day, the Jets have to take care of business. They have to beat Colorado tomorrow night, mm-hmm. and we'll talk more about Colorado with AJ Haefeli, who's coming up at 10:45. He writes for bsndenver.com. So they have to take care of business, of course, and beat Colorado, and then they've got Arizona to end the season. But when you look at how the Jets have struggled, we've talked about it. They've been a 500 team for the last 3 months. What concerns you the most? Because for me, it's the amount of shots and the amount of goals they're giving up.
Well, let's go back to the captain and listen to his comments. Not actually. Easy on the trigger finger, Chris, but just listen to listen to how he ends. We need to find structure, excitement, and enthusiasm back in the room. Those are three critical factors for a hockey team entering the most important part of the season, the postseason. So you look at that, and you know they got to get the good feelings back in the room. Especially, I think a lot of it has to do with the top six and how they're performing, and then I think perhaps the lack of success they've had has maybe a bit of a trickle-down effect into the bottom six and just the offense in general. But yeah, they need to win out. It's important. They should approach these games, these final two games, essentially as playoff games. The regular season is over. You know, if you're going to flip the switch, let's do it now. And let's. I wanted to pose a question to you, Ezzy. What do you think is more important for the Jets? You know, playoff home ice, albeit. How they play these final two games or the results?
Right. And the last two games, you can't fix everything in the last two games. I mean, the Jets definitely will benefit greatly from having home ice advantage.
Absolutely.
Right? Even though they've been much better on the road this year, we know what the crowd does for the Jets. We just know how well the Jets have played the last couple of years, right? They've been one of the best home teams over the last couple of years. So it's very important, at the very least, that they end up in second. And it's very unlikely that the Jets are going to fall to third. I mean, it's possible, but the Blues are going to need help in order to leapfrog the Jets.
How fragile will they be if they go into the playoffs losing these final two games? You think that will affect them?
Put it this way. I do think it can have an effect, but just because the Jets lose the last game or they lose one of these last two games, I wouldn't completely write the Jets off, but the reality is you'd rather face Dallas, right, in the first round, and that's the huge, you know, risk here if you end up falling out of first. And sure, if you finish second, you still have home ice in the first round, but I think the most dangerous, I guess, thing that's facing the Jets right now is the way that they are playing and their inability to get back in hockey games. And I think that's what you've been seeing here over the last couple of months. And the Jets didn't lose a lot of games when they were leading after two periods. And that's something that you've seen more and more this year. You know, we talk about the San Jose game. We talk about the Islanders game. Earlier in the season, it happened, a collapse against the Minnesota Wild. So time and time again this year, we've seen the Jets squander leads. And if you had that extra four-point cushion, first place would be wrapped up in the Central Division, right? So when you're talking about, you know, this Jets team, I think there are a lot of reasons to be concerned. Do I think that the Jets can still win and get to the second round, get to the Western Conference Final? Absolutely. Because we've seen teams in the past struggle over the last 10, 15, 20 games and still go far in the playoffs. There are definitely, as I mentioned, big red flags for this Jets team. Absolutely. But I'm not going to completely write them off.
No.
I think there are a lot of Jets fans that are very pessimistic about the Jets' chances.
That's a polite way of saying it.
Well, but you look at the Nashville Predators, right? They were a 117-point team last year. The best they're going to finish is 100 points this year, right? So, I mean, the Predators have their issues of their own. I mean, you're talking about a team that doesn't score as many goals last year. I mean, there's serious depth issues with the Nashville Predators. So there's a lot of cause for concern, as I mentioned. I mean, this Jets team right now, even though they have a good shot at winning the division, they can still fall out of it and they can finish as low as third, even though by not winning the game tonight, the Blues are in tough to finish first in the Central.
You read anything into practice being canceled today?
I don't read too much into practice being canceled in the sense that we knew that there was a players-only meeting after the game last night, so it doesn't surprise me. I thought they would practice tonight, but when you look at the gravity of the situation, losing five of your last seven games, you've been really struggling, you know, over the last not only 2-3 weeks, but really the second half of the season. And it's, I think, the effort level that probably causes the most concern for not only Jets fans, but the players and coaching staff themselves, because the game against Montreal, the game last night against the Minnesota Wild, there were parts of that game where the Jets just looked lethargic and their effort level didn't look as high as it was in previous games, whether that's against the Nashville Predators or the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, the big dogs in the NHL. So they need to address some issues that are currently, you know, plaguing this team. So in that sense, not that surprised, but a little bit surprised, Shawnee, because they had the players only meeting after the game. So you thought they'd get back on the ice and start practicing. But obviously, you know, the coaching staff wasn't happy with just the players meeting. They wanted more. So, you know, we'll see what happens tomorrow night. But it's a huge game for the Jets. You have first place on the line in the Central Division. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Scott Billick of NHL.com and NBC Pro Hockey Talk. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We're back here on NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg, producer Chris Curry. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by our very good friend of NHL.com and NBC's Pro Hockey Talk, Scotty Billick. Scott, good evening. Thanks for staying up late and joining us tonight.
This is well past my bedtime. I don't think I've ever been on the radio this late. So,
Scott, just put a little Darude Sandstorm on during the interview and you'll be okay.
That keeps me going all the time. You have no idea. Yeah.
Scott, obviously a very disappointing loss last night for the Winnipeg Jets. I don't know if you caught any of the game, but the Jets now tied with the Nashville Predators after the Predators pick up that big win. The Jets, of course, have the tiebreaker. But, you know, watching that game last night, a game in which, you know, the Jets actually played pretty well in the first period. I think you'd agree with that. But the Wild score 3 goals on 9 shots. Zach Parise, of course, scores 2 of those 3 goals. But what did you think of the way the Jets played, but also what did you think of that players-only meeting? That's obviously what everybody wants to talk about today. Where is this team at? Because it seems like this was a bit of a crisis meeting today.
Yeah, either a crisis meeting or just one to, try and stop the bleeding, before it kind of gets out of control. I mean, I think Paul Maurice said, it's better to have it now than to have it after, right? And you don't want to have it. You don't want to have it after game 82. You don't want to be doing this in the first round of the playoffs. So, if something needs to be said, if people need to be called out, whatever happens in these closed door meetings needs to happen. Whatever has to happen in them. I mean, do it now before the games actually mean something. And I don't mean that the games don't mean anything now. I mean, the Jets are still in a dogfight here for first place in the Central Division. And, it's debatable about how much people, that matters in the long run. But at the end of the day, you don't also want to go into the playoffs knowing you crashed out of first place. Maybe you finish in second, maybe you finish in third. And to do that, the Jets are going to have to lose at least one more game to do that too. They'll have to lose both their games. So, if you're going to back into the playoffs like that and not be playing your best hockey, I haven't heard anybody say this is the way any team would want to go into the playoffs. It's weird because tomorrow they have to play a team that's fighting for their lives too, and they've struggled against teams that are doing that. Minnesota had a chance last night before they got bounced, but you could see the performance they put on in that game, and then you got to expect that the Colorado Avalanche coming in are going to be wanting to do the same thing, right? And so, the Jets have to figure out a way to deal with these desperate teams. I don't think desperate teams go away in the playoffs. You're going to be playing against teams that are desperate for wins, desperate to move on, desperate to win a Stanley Cup. The mindset might change from desperate to just try and make the playoffs, but the intensity only goes up higher in the playoffs, and the Jets got to figure out how to kind of match that intensity here with 2 games remaining. It seems like a tall order for a team that hasn't played well, and you were talking about before I came on, it hasn't played well in the last half of the year. I mean, a lot of things need to turn around here for the Jets to be considered Stanley Cup contenders, because I think a lot of people right now think they're not even going to make it out of the first round. And, given the way that they've played over the last little while, other than that aberration game against the Predators a week and a half ago, it's just the way that mindset has changed around here based on the way the Jets have played.
Scotty, the perfect segue into my question here. The hope is that essentially the team reverts back to those 5-0 victors that beat the Preds back on March 23rd. But, mm-hmm. How concerning is it that the last time we saw that team was back on March 23rd when they beat the Preds 5-0? We haven't seen that team since that victory.
Well, I think after that win, people are like, oh, okay, this is the Winnipeg Jets team that that they've become accustomed to. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, or a week and a half later after that, it's like, well, no, I mean, the Jets just reverted back to the way they were. They played a really good game against the Predators, and that was kind of the only game that they've really kind of done that in the last little while, where they've played that, just that style of game. I mean, they gave Nashville no chance, right? And but then they've reverted back to this team who's, you know, struggling with leads in the third period, can't hold on to them, can't hold on to even getting into overtime and at least picking up a point. I mean, you know, Jets have had a bad month in terms of giving up third period leads. So yeah, I mean, it would be unfair of me to say, or it wouldn't be the right thing for me to say that the Jets can be like that Nashville. I mean, they can be like that Nashville team, but I don't know if that's the norm right now. I mean, right now that this team is a team that struggles with, you know, teams they probably shouldn't be struggling with, regardless of what it is. And I mean, there's a number of issues that you could look at this team, whether it's D-zone coverage, whether it's the penalty kill, whether whatever, you know, if the power play isn't working, whether it's coaching, you know, just a lack of interest, fatigue. I mean, there's tons of issues. I kind of tweeted out a list of them yesterday. And I don't know what it is, if it's a mixture of all of them, whatever it is. But I mean, I think that's the biggest problem right now, is there could be all these contributing factors to why the Jets are. I don't know how you kind of, you know, you fix that with just two games to go and then, you know, a few days off and then you're right back at it against whoever you're going to end up playing, depending how they kind of finish down the stretch here.
We're joined by Scott Billick of NHL.com and NBC's Pro Hockey Talk on NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. And you know, Scott, there are no shortage of Jets players right now that are struggling to put the puck in the net. Mark Scheifele, he's got one goal in his last seven games. And Patrick Laine, it's hard to believe this, but he's only got one goal in his last 17 games. That's 1-7, not 7, as in Scheifele only has one goal in his last 7. But when you talk about those two players and some of the other guys that are struggling to put the puck in the net, best case scenario for this Jets team, is it for players like Scheifele and Laine to break out and score some goals in bunches in these last two games?
Well, I mean, at least getting one would be a start, right? I mean, when we saw Mark Scheifele last year in the playoffs, I mean, Jets would have won one in the cup. I mean, Mark Scheifele probably wins a Conn Smythe, right? I mean, just the way that he was performing in the playoffs. But yeah, I mean, you know, even you can throw Blake Wheeler into there too. I mean, you know, two-thirds of that top line, and then that's kind of where it's been, because they've kind of, you know, moved guys around in that spot now. But they're not really producing. I mean, they've kind of relied on, you know, maybe the third line or the fourth line. I mean, thank goodness that they've had, you know, Matthew Perreault and then Jack Rossovic step up, and those guys who've you know, figured out how to, you know, find some of that secondary scoring when the top two lines aren't sorting it out. I mean, Kevin Hayes gets the overtime winner the other night. You know, that's a big goal and something that's, you know, needed from him too, right? I mean, he's going to be counted upon to find the back of the net too. Kyle Connor needs to kind of start doing it again. I mean, I don't think it's just, I mean, Scheifele and Wheeler and Laine are the guys you're hoping that are going to lead, but I mean, until Patrick Laine gets out of this funk of not scoring, I don't know how much you can kind of depend on that. So you need some of the other guys, the older guys, the more experienced guys to come in and kind of deal with it. So, and pick up the slack there. And yeah, I mean, I think it all just starts with you know, playing a solid hockey game from start to finish. And as cliche as that sounds, I mean, I think that's what the Jets need. They need the confidence that they can actually play three periods of hockey, put together a good game, and go from there. And whether that means Mark Scheifele scoring or not, I mean, any win, just a little bit of confidence, knowing that you kind of worked the team well. And I think that starts tomorrow night. I think, you know, if you can beat the Colorado Avalanche, a team that's desperate, if you can put in a good result against them, I think that goes a long way to restoring that confidence, just given, you know, what Colorado needs out of that game, how desperate they are, and how bad the Jets have been against some of those teams lately. So, yeah, scoring helps. I mean, getting guys back on the board in the right direction would surely help. But I think just playing a good team game and kind of just a good team game. I think they just need to start, with the kind of those simple things and go from there. And hopefully you can build up whatever confidence you need over, the next 120 minutes of hockey.
You know, Scotty, storylines aplenty coming out of Minnesota last night. But, I mean, one thing that we haven't really discussed very much this evening is the loss of Brandon Tanev at yesterday's game. I mean, this could be a huge loss for the Jets if he's out long-term, a guy whose game is pretty much molded for the playoffs.
Yeah, and, somebody who's as rugged as he is too, right? I mean, Brandon Tanev doesn't stay out of hockey games unless something's actually wrong, which... I'm not going to speculate on his injury here. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe they kept him out precautionary. Who knows? I mean, but it's one of those things where Brent Tanev will play a game as long as he's, he doesn't have a broken hand or a broken arm or a broken foot or whatever it is. I mean, the guy comes to play and we've seen it. He's been hitting the face. He's been hitting the back of the head with a puck. I mean, the guy doesn't seem to get injured. So when he is out, I think that is cause for concern. And then, on top of that, I mean, the fact that, Brandon Tanev, I still think he's an integral piece. Mm-hmm. Just the way the makeup of that second line, if Mahal Maurice ever puts, TLC back together and gets those guys going, I mean, that line was dominant and Brandon Tanev was part of that. And I still think Brandon Tanev oftentimes, kind of the energy of the team kind of can come from what he does. I mean, that guy... there's only one gear for him and he goes and goes and goes and goes. And, I think when the team isn't going and he's the guy that's still coming out there and putting on a good performance, his underlying numbers won't always be flattering to him. But I mean, I think he just brings something to the team and I think you're going to miss, they'll miss seeing him in the lineup if he has to miss some time. So, yeah, I do think that would be a big loss for them. I just think, just given the makeup of that third line and the potential of TLC coming back together for the playoffs, if that's how they choose. I mean, if Tanev can't go in that spot, I still think, some bigger shoes to fill. I won't say it's the biggest shoes, but, it's a tough game that Brandon Tanev plays, and he brings, quite a bit of energy, and I think that's something that would be kind of sorely missed if he has to miss some time here.
And Scott, we should mention that because the Jets didn't practice today and there was no media availability, we don't know the extent of Brandon Tanev's injury, so we're going to find out tomorrow whether or not he's going to play against the Colorado Avalanche. It would obviously be, as you mentioned, a huge loss for the Jets. Tanev's having a career year, 14 goals and 29 points. Scotty Billick of NHL.com, the Winnipeg Sun, and NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. He's a good friend of the program. Scotty, thanks so much for joining us tonight, and have a good rest of your night. I imagine you're going to be going to bed pretty soon.
No, I'm still working for NBC right now, so I still got a lot more work to get done before the end of the night. But I appreciate it. Thanks for having me again.
And you got to listen to the rest of our show, right?
Indeed, yes. I'll have it on in the background for sure.
All right, take care, Scotty. See you soon.
See you, guys. Yeah, goodbye.
All right, let's head to break. When we come back, Shawnee, we're going to switch our focus a little bit here. Mm-hmm. Coming up at 10:45, we're going to talk to AJ Haefeli of BSNDenver.com to preview tomorrow night's game between the Jets and the Avalanche. But next segment, we're going to talk about reigning Norris Trophy winner Victor Hedman. He was injured on the weekend against the Washington Capitals. The speculation is it might be a concussion, but we're going to talk about Victor Hedman and the impact that could have on the Tampa Bay Lightning's playoff run. Obviously, they're President's Trophy champions, but they have their eyes on that Stanley Cup. You're listening to the NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We're back on NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor, the Jets and Avalanche, the second last game of the regular season tomorrow night in Denver. I still find that hard to believe.
It's crazy. It is crazy.
We're at game 81. We have already played 80 games. It's April 3rd. Maybe it's because it doesn't feel like it out there. I mean, it was miserable today in Winnipeg. It felt more like February.
It was windy today.
Just ridiculous. Jets and Avs, as I mentioned, tomorrow night in Denver. This segment, we're going to talk about Victor Hedman. Some unfortunate news for the Tampa Bay Lightning on the weekend. For those who didn't see it, Victor Hedman and Carl Hagelin, who's now on the Capitals. I mean, people forget He was on the Kings. Before that, he was on the Penguins. But Carl Hagelin was acquired prior to the trade deadline. He's actually played pretty well for the Caps, who are currently in first in the Metro Division, trying to hang on to first in the Metro Division. Mm-hmm. And it looked like, again, for those who haven't seen this, Hagelin and his helmet got up on Victor Hedman's head. And it looked like, you know, Hedman was shaken up. And obviously, he left that game on the weekend. And right now, as it stands, his long-term health is uncertain. John Cooper, Lightning head coach, has not said whether or not it's a concussion. But, you know, if you put two and two together, I mean, there is certainly, at the very least, reason to believe that it could be a concussion. And, you know, we talked about it before the break. I mentioned, you know, this is the reigning Norris Trophy winner. Victor Hedman, you know, there's a good chance that he's going to be a Norris Trophy finalist again this year. I mean, a lot of people, you know, have Mark Giordano in there as well. You know, maybe you throw in a Brent Burns, maybe Chris Letang is in the conversation. But at the very least, you know, forget, you know, we're going to talk about that later, but forget about the Norris Trophy here for a second, Shawnee. This is a top five, you know, maybe top three, top defenseman in the entire league. Yeah. The question I have for you and what we want to talk about here this segment, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning are obviously having their dream season. You know, the best team by far in the NHL. They won the President's Trophy 3 months ago, really, if you think about it.
But, they won it when we were doing our season preview show.
Right. But, you know, Shawnee, when you talk about that defense, because, you know, we're not at all concerned about the offense. You know, Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, Braden Point, Tyler Johnson, Andre Palat, Alex Killorn. The Lightning score more goals than anybody. And Victor Hedman is in that category as well, one of the best offensive defensemen. And the Lightning did get Anton Strahlman back recently, but Dan Girardi, still out of the lineup. He's not going to play in the last couple regular season games. The Lightning play the Leafs tomorrow night, and that's a big game because they're still trying to tie the Detroit Red Wings' 62 win record. They can't beat that, but the Lightning are currently at 60 wins. So, you know, you can say whether or not that means something to the Lightning, but you know that they want to finish strong and, you know, possibly get to 62 wins. So the Lightning right now are the favorite. Everybody has the Lightning as the favorite, Shawnee, but if Victor Hedman is out for any significant amount of time, let's say that he misses the first round or he misses, you know, three or four games in the first round, do you still feel as good about the Lightning's chances to win the Stanley Cup?
I think a lot of pressure falls on Mikhail Sergachev. And just reading Joe Smith's article out of The Athletic, he talks about the increased role for the young Russian blue liner and just how he's excelled. He's, you know, he's averaging around 20 minutes a game now. Usually, you know, Sergachev was brought into the Lightning from Montreal to be a top four D-man. And, you know, he's been on a 5-6 kind of bubble cusp of, you know, breaking through for the last season or so. But now he's getting that opportunity. When Hedman was around, he was playing with Victor Hedman, or they expect him to play with Victor Hedman if he comes back, and Dan Girardi, his normal partner, is still sidelined. But it's a big opportunity for a young blue liner who's taken over his top power play unit, his spot on the top power play. You know, he's getting some heavier matchups than he's used to in his young career. And, well, that's another thing about Victor Hedman. You talk about the hole he fills in this lineup. I mean, he leaves in the lineup. He quarterbacks the power play. He's top PK. He averages about 25 minutes a night, and he's a matchup god. You can put him against anyone, and he will just be an absolute gem. And you look at some of the scoring chances that the Lightning have given up. They're starting to give up a few more average per game. And, yeah, there's concern within the dressing room. They need Victor Hedman back. I mean, it's a deep decor, but if Dan Girardi and Victor Hedman are out long-term, and like we talk about this uncertainty with his injury. I mean, this is his fourth concussion of his career already. And at one point he missed a month of time. I believe it was 2011, his second concussion. He missed a month of time. So there's concern he could be sidelined. So I think a lot of pressure falls on this young, budding Sergachev, this blue liner who's really embraced right now this role, and we'll see what happens as we enter the most critical part of the season.
And as we mentioned before, Dan Girardi is not going to play the last two regular right. season games, but there is a chance that he's going to be healthy for the start of the first round of the playoffs next week. But you're right, Sean. I mean, when you're talking about those two defensemen, you think of Dan Girardi, 34 years old, you know, kind of didn't finish very well with the New York Rangers, but that has been the Lightning's top pair, Girardi and mm-hmm. Victor Hedman. And, you know, Ryan McDonagh, you know, speaking of the Norris Trophy conversation, Ryan McDonagh, one of the best defensive defensemen, you know, can also chip in offensively, but he's your prototypical shutdown defenseman, was so for so many years with the New York Rangers. And, you know, now your top pair is Ryan McDonagh and Eric Chernak, a guy that hasn't been talked about a lot, but he's a rookie defenseman. Slovakian defenseman has got great size, and he's actually fit in really nicely.
Yeah, all the reports are saying that he's been a game changer on the right side for the Lightning.
Well, and, you know, you talk about, you know, Chernak, and he's got the size. He dropped the gloves, you know, the other night. He's a guy that can fight as well. But, you know, we talked about Anton Strålman, you know, excellent defenseman, Mikhail Sergachev. That's a pair for the Lightning right now, head coach John Cooper. But, you know, Jan Ruda is a guy that the Lightning acquired prior to the deadline, former Chicago Blackhawks defenseman. You know, Braden Coburn and Jan Ruda, that's your third pair. It's unbelievable. Braden Coburn, a former first-round pick, is on the third pair. He's actually had a pretty decent season as well. So even though the Lightning have the depth and they're able to put in a guy like Jan Ruda, not, you know, a top four defenseman, but a guy that is definitely serviceable, a guy that can definitely skate, he can move the puck. But when you're talking about Hedman, I agree. He has the concussion history, and I'm more worried, Shawnee, that Hedman is going to be out for a longer period of time. I think if he misses a game or two in the first round, that's not a big deal, because
you can survive. He's easy. A game or two, yeah. The, the depth on this team, they can step up and, you know, counteract his absence.
Right, and you're talking about the Montreal Canadiens or the Columbus Blue Jackets, most likely in the first round, maybe the Carolina Hurricanes, but you're talking about the Lightning being a huge favorite in that first round, even though the Canadiens and the Blue Jackets are pretty damn good offensive teams, not the best offensive teams in the league, but I still think that you've got some excellent defensemen. As you mentioned, Mikhail Sergachev, you know, he has the ability to play 23, 24 minutes a night in Victor Hedman's absence. And then Ryan McDonagh and Eric Chernak. Again, Chernak is not a household name, and that might be because he's a rookie defenseman, but just watch the Lightning play, and, exactly. And you know, Chernak is doing an excellent job, you know, next to one of the best defensive defensemen in American history, right? Ryan McDonagh is such a fantastic defenseman. And on this team, you know, he's not even the top defenseman, of course, with, you know, Victor Hedman there. So Mikhail Sergachev, as you mentioned, he's going to have to step up, but definitely something to watch, because this has been an almost perfect season for the Tampa Bay Lightning. But if Victor Hedman is out, and again, we don't know, we're going to find out, you know, closer to the start of the first round of the playoffs next week. But I think that if Hedman misses any significant amount of time, that could seriously hurt the Lightning's shot at going all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals and winning the Cup. And that's what we know this team wants to do. They're not going to be happy with just getting to the Eastern Final again or even getting to the Stanley Cup Final. They want to win that Cup when you have as much talent as they do. We're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by AJ Haefeli of BSNDenver.com. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Nathan MacKinnon, Mr. 40 Goals. Welcome back to NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by AJ Haefeli of BSNDenver.com. AJ, good evening. Thanks for staying up late with us and joining us on NHL This Week tonight.
Yeah, boys, always my pleasure to come on and talk a little Avalanche hockey with you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, and obviously a huge game, colossal game between the Jets and the Avalanche tomorrow night. The Jets are tied with the Predators, 96 points. Let's start off, AJ, with last night's game between the Avalanche and the Oilers. It was looking a little touchy there in the first period. The Oilers go up 2-0, but the Avalanche score four unanswered goals in the second period. They go on to a 6-2 win over the Edmonton Oilers. What can you say about that performance and specifically Nathan MacKinnon scoring his 40th goal and getting the ball rolling?
Well, you know, it certainly helps when you have a must-win game and the Oilers are the one that are coming to town. And, you know, they got out to that 2-0 lead, and it was kind of a fluky 2-0 lead. So you're not feeling very good about it, because hockey's a cruel sport, but you're also feeling like you're not really getting beat by these guys. And, you know, they gave Colorado three power plays in a row, and it's like, it's at some point, you know, you can only shoot yourself in the foot so many times before you have problems walking, you know. And McKinnon just blew through the neutral zone, caught everybody flat-footed, got his 40th goal. At that point, Pepsi Center started rocking, and the Avs were feeling it. When they feed off the energy of the crowd like that, they are definitely one of the hardest teams to beat at home. When they start feeling the energy like that, and they start feeding off of it, and it just turns into this. It's just a feeding frenzy of energy and chaos, and they unleashed all over Edmonton last night. And, you know, the Oilers aren't any good, and they don't have anything to play for. Connor McDavid was a ghost, except on the other end of that Colin Wilson goal. And really, you know, the Avs, once they woke up, it wasn't close anymore.
AJ, I remember talking about the Avalanche throughout the season, and, you know, it almost sounded like a broken record. We just kept saying, you know, this team just can't seem to get a save when they need one from either netminder. And then fast forward to April, and we're approaching the postseason. It seems like both netminders rounding into form at the most important time of the season.
Yeah, you know, Varley had kind of lost when he lost the March 15th game 5-3 against Anaheim. He lost his net, and Grubauer had a couple of strong starts. And then Grubauer just didn't want to give it back at that point. He said, they brought me in to be the starter, and I'm going to be the starter now, and this is my net, and see ya, dude. And, you know, now Grubauer has been unbelievable over the last 8 starts. And, you know, they gave Varley the start last night because it was a back-to-back. They were traveling. They needed the rest. And Edmonton's not any good. So they thought they would roll the dice with the cold guy. And he ended up having a good, solid performance for him. You know, Varley rises to the occasion and kind of goes against the story of his career, honestly. He was clutch in a big moment that they needed him, and it was good to see. It might be the last time we see him start in Pepsi Center for the Avs. So if that's how he goes out, that was, you know, a great way to go. But this is Grubauer's net right now, and whatever happens in the next 2 games and maybe beyond in the postseason is gonna likely rest on how well Phil Grubauer handles the job.
So, yeah, like, regardless of what happens over the next 2 games, you think it's Grubauer who gets the start for the postseason?
Oh, yeah. This is Grubauer's job right now. You're not going to give the reins to Varley unless, knock on wood, something happens to Grubauer physically in the next 3 days, which, you know, knowing how Colorado's luck is with goaltenders, that'll probably happen. But it's Grubauer's net. It's his job. There's no way that they're going to go away from him at this point.
We're joined by A.J. Hafley on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. A.J. is the editor-in-chief of BSNDenver.com. And, A.J., I have to ask you about Tyson Barrie. He picked up a goal and an assist in the win last night over the Edmonton Oilers. He's now up to 13 goals and 58 points. That's a new career high for Tyson Barrie. His previous career high was 57 points. Where would this team be without Tyson Barrie?
They would not be where they are. You know, they would be in the same place as the Chicagos and the Edmontons of the world. When Mikko Rantanen went down, when Gabe Landeskog went down, Tyson Barrie was the guy who stepped up and started scoring goals like a madman. You know, 3 weeks ago, Tyson Barrie had 7 goals on the season. So, you know, I think he's got, you know, you mentioned it just now, he's got 13 now on the year, and that's much more in line with his career. And he's really risen to the occasion, and he stepped up big and provided that secondary scoring when the Avs had the big injuries up front. When he gets playing with a lot of confidence, there are not very many defensemen in the NHL who are able to move pucks through the neutral zone and generate quality scoring chances like he can. He's really a unique snowflake here in Denver.
AJ, just shifting our focus a little bit from off the ice, I just have to give you a shout-out for using a gif of Cartman licking the tears of Scott Tederman on your feed, one of my all-time favorite South Park moments, so amazing. Thank you for that. It was a nice little moment to relive that for myself, but I'm just, you know, back to the ice. Matched up against the Flames now, if the playoffs were starting today, do you like that matchup for the Avalanche?
I don't love it. I mean, I can't say I like any of the matchups because I think all those teams are ultimately probably better than Colorado. But, you know, the records against some of the teams are a little deceiving. Colorado actually had two games in Calgary this year that they should have won. The first one, they were up 4-1 going into the third period, and you know, Ian Cole got ejected for blowing a guy up at the blue line and sparked a fight and turned into all kinds of chaos. And then Calgary ended up scoring, I think, 5 third period goals that night and won that game 6-4, 6-5. And then the other one was the night after the Avs had actually played in Winnipeg, and the Avs had outplayed the Jets pretty thoroughly, but they couldn't get a stop that night. Grubauer gave up a bunch of goals, and then the Avs went into Calgary the next night. They had the infamous Nathan MacKinnon falling off the bench thing in a game that they thoroughly dominated, but they couldn't, again, they couldn't get a stop. So they've had a couple of games against Calgary where they've outplayed them. I think they've been the better team, and goaltending is always it. And it's kind of the same thing with Winnipeg, you know, that they've gone up against the Jets this year, and you know, the record is a little deceiving because I think the Avs have lost a couple of games in which they outplayed them. So it's not great matchups, but, you know, it is what it is.
AJ Haefeli of BSNDenver.com is joining us on the NHL This Week with the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. And, you know, sticking with the playoffs because, you know, unless there's, you know, a complete meltdown, the Colorado Avalanche are going to the playoffs. They haven't officially clinched a playoff spot. The Arizona Coyotes, I think, have a 0.0007% chance or something like that. But when you talk about the playoffs, AJ, what's the X factor for you? Because I think you'd agree, I mean, goaltending is going to be important in any series, and Philip Grubauer is obviously going to have to be really good for Colorado if they have a chance at beating a powerhouse like the Calgary Flames. But who would that X factor on the Avalanche be for you?
You know, honestly, I would say it's Eric Johnson. Obviously, every series is going to hinge on goaltending, and then your top scorers have to be your top scorers. But I think over the last few weeks, we really haven't seen Colorado's top defensive pairing of Sam Girard and Eric Johnson step up in the way that you would really be hoping that they would. I think EJ has been a little too deferential to Girard's development this year. He hasn't been as aggressive and as confident offensively, and I think it's had an effect on his overall game. He just looks a little indecisive at times, especially in his own zone. He's not moving his feet very well. And anybody who's watched a lot of Avalanche hockey over the last 6-7 years can tell you that when EJ's not moving his feet, he's not at his best. And he's been a little too deferential, a little too willing to sit back and play the defensive role. And I think he is a guy that when you talk about getting into a 7-game series, you're talking about home roads and you're talking forward matchups and line matching and all those little X's and O's and the strategy that goes into it, Pedreau, and to shut him down. And if he can't do that with any kind of comfort, then the Avs aren't going to have a chance in that series. So Eric Johnson's going to have to step his game up significantly from what we've seen the last few weeks if Colorado's going to have a chance to make a little noise in the postseason.
And AJ, just quickly, you know, we're just touching on the blue line. Fair to say that Cale Makar will be in an Avalanche uniform next season and maybe even sooner?
Fair to say, yeah. I think depending on how that series goes, depending on what happens with UMass and when if Colorado is fortunate enough to clinch a playoff spot, when the series starts, you know, if UMass loses to the Pioneers early on next week, then, you know, Cale Makar could get to Calgary, could sink his teeth into that series back where he's from and make his debut there. And if they don't want to rush it that quickly, or if UMass continues on, then maybe he makes his debut here in Denver in front of the home crowd. But Jared Bednar was asked the question straight up, can Cale Makar help you in the playoffs? And he said yes. I mean, unequivocally, he said, yeah, that's a guy that could help us. He's an elite talent on the back end. Colorado is like most every other NHL team out there. They're not above talented guys on defense, and Cale Makar is about as special as it's going to get in the next few years on the blue line. So I think, certainly there's a good chance we see him in the postseason. And if not, then good luck for the rest of the NHL because you have all summer to think about that guy coming next year.
The Jets and Avalanche meet tomorrow night, puck drop at 8 o'clock Central Time. The game obviously takes place at Pepsi Center in the Mile High City. AJ Haefeli is the editor-in-chief of BSNDenver.com. AJ, thanks so much for joining us tonight, and may the best team win tomorrow.
Yeah, I always appreciate coming on. You know, I made the argument that they should just play 60 minutes of stalemate hockey, each get a point, and then go ham in overtime and see what happens.
Oh, that would be fantastic. I don't think any hockey fan would have a problem with the Jets and Avalanche playing in overtime in the second last game of the season.
Yeah, it'd be a good time.
All right, AJ, thanks again.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure.
All right.
You fellas have a good night.
You too. Cheers. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Connor McDavid and how he is a little bit frustrated with how the season went for the Oilers. He voiced a little frustration earlier this week after the Oilers were officially eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
No, it's frustrating. No, we want to play in the playoffs as a team. I personally want to play in the playoffs. I'm not happy about it. It's going to be a long time.
Number 97 is not happy about the Oilers missing the playoffs for the second year in a row, the third time in the last 4 years. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor, producer Chris Curry, Drew Mandel is away from the program. He'll be back next week. And I should mention again, next week is going to be our official NHL playoff preview show next Tuesday from 7 to 10 on TSN Radio 1290. Shawnee, obviously a disappointing year for the Oilers, but also one of the strangest years for any team in recent memory. Head coach Todd McLellan is fired. Peter Chiarelli is fired after Mikko Koskinen is given that really weird three-year contract. The Oilers are up 2-0 on the Colorado Avalanche last night. It looks like they're going to play the role of spoiler. The Avs score 4 goals in the second period. They end up winning 6-2. But let's specifically talk about McDavid's comments, because as you know, Sean, McDavid is a player who doesn't really speak too openly after games. Maybe openly isn't the right word. He doesn't give you too much. He's pretty guarded.
I was going to use the word guarded.
Right? He's pretty careful is the word I would use. And it's probably because he's been speaking to the media since he was 14 years old. He's obviously, you know, up there with Sidney Crosby and Wayne Gretzky as far as, you know, the great Canadian hockey prodigies. But what did you think of Connor McDavid's comments? Because it almost felt like those comments were from Monday, obviously. It almost felt like, you know, McDavid had been waiting, you know, all season long to really vent his frustration to the media.
It felt like he was a 2 liter of Coke and someone poured in 7 Mentos and some frustration makers, Mentos, and he just erupted. It was as if he was waiting all season to kind of let that out. And you listen to some of the things he said: emotionally challenging, it was hard mentally to keep going. An insane season. Connor McDavid, one of the most carefully worded, calculated individuals who knows and has planned out every word he says to the media, to say an insane season, and then he references the GM and the coaching change. I mean, this is a guy who wants to compete at the highest level. He's been that way since he was probably 9 years old. And he's not even getting an opportunity to compete for the highest honor in the league he plays in and dominates in. So, yeah, 3 to 4 seasons. It's got to weigh on you, especially how everything transpired this season, especially when you look at the fact that he's got a fellow 100-point player on his team, 2 100-point players, and they're going to miss the playoffs. But hey, whose fault is it? Toby Reeder.
Well, and yeah, that's funny. And obviously you're referencing, you know, when Oilers president of hockey operations, Bob Nicholson, referenced Toby Reeder and how if Toby Reeder would have scored 10 more goals, maybe the Oilers would be in the playoffs. But, you know, you're talking about Leon Draisaitl, obviously, and he's at 102 points. And between Draisaitl and McDavid, you're talking about 217 points. Throw in Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, mm-hmm. He's having a career year as well. And it's clear to most hockey observers that the Edmonton Oilers really have 3 star players. And then you have a supporting cast that just isn't good enough, right? And you know, you've seen the Oilers trade so many times this year, the Ryan Strome for Ryan Spooner trade. You mentioned, you know, bringing in Toby Reeder. You brought in Sam Gagner from the American Hockey League. I mean, trade after trade just didn't quite work. So I guess the question, you know, that has to come up here when you're talking about McDavid, you know, this is his fourth year, as we talked about, in the NHL, and this is his best year to date. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about McDavid, I think everyone would agree that McDavid isn't going anywhere. Not just, you know, the fact that he's under contract, but it's still early enough, I think, in his career that the Oilers can turn this around, Sean. But at what point do you have to question, you know, whether or not McDavid is going to be able to still think that there is a chance that the Oilers can turn it around if they continue to struggle next year or possibly the year after? Because I think the biggest issue with this Oilers team, and obviously they need a general manager, and that general manager needs to name a permanent head coach, but there isn't a quick fix here. Buying Milan Lucic out or making one or two trades or signing a number one defenseman in the offseason is not going to solve all of the Oilers' problems. They're at least three, four, five players away from turning this around. Yes, the Oilers have some good prospects. Kaylor Yamamoto is a good prospect. They have other prospects in the system. But I think that's what frustrates Oilers fans the most, and what probably frustrates Connor McDavid himself the most, is that it's tough to see how the Oilers are going to be much better next year.
It's crazy. And you feel for a guy who has carried this team for so many seasons already, and he's probably looking at this roster and he's probably looking at his experiences on the ice and in practice and just being with his team, and he just probably foresees a few more seasons of heavy lifting for himself and Leon Draisaitl and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins until, like you talked about, either, first of all, they solidify their general manager position, then they solidify the head coaching position, and then those two individuals plus the management team have to look at this roster and say, okay, now what changes need to be made? And so then you implement a whole new roster and a whole new, philosophy to the team. And it changes are coming for Connor McDavid and Edmonton Oilers, and whether or not, you know, he wants to stick around to adjust. And I'm, you know, he's a proud individual. I'm sure he wants to help turn this thing around. He's a competitor. He's a winner. But I mean, at some point, how many years of this guy's prime can you waste away?
Well, and Shawnee, you mentioned, you know, Toby Reeder earlier and Bob Nicholson's comments about Toby Reeder, which are obviously infamous now because they were just so ridiculous. But a lot of people in Edmonton, not just fans, but, you know, people in the media and observers, are questioning whether Bob Nicholson should be part of this Oilers organization, certainly in his current role as president of hockey operations. Many people are questioning why should he still hold that position? Not saying that he shouldn't be part of the organization, but why should he be the one that ultimately makes the decision? And obviously, you know, Kevin Lowe, Craig McTavish, there are others there. Daryl Cates obviously has a say in who's going to be the general manager. But, you know, to your point, whoever they bring in as general manager, whether that's, you know, Kelly McCrimmon or Mark Hunter, and obviously Kelly McCrimmon isn't going anywhere because the Golden Knights are going to the playoffs, and obviously the Oilers can't talk to him until the Golden Knights give him permission after the season. But the point is, whoever is brought in as the general manager and whoever is hired as the coach, you know, whether that's Joel Quenneville, Alain Vigneault, whoever it is, this Oilers team has major holes to fill. We talked about it. Sure, even if you buy out Milan Lucic and you get some of that cap relief, this Oilers team, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not the only one that said this, they still lack a number one defenseman. They lack a number one and a number two defenseman. Is Mikko Koskinen your number one goaltender? What has he done this year to show you that he's a number one goaltender?
He got a raise.
I think you can make a strong argument that at best he's a backup at the NHL level. Can you really count on Mikko Koskinen for 50 games, 55 games a year? And then you talk about that supporting cast. I mean, Jesse Puljujärvi is still only 21 years old. Obviously, you know, a number four overall pick. We talked about Yamamoto. He's a top prospect in the Oilers system.
Ethan Bear on the blue line, and they have a lot of big aspirations.
Right, and we just saw Ethan Bear against the Manitoba Moose playing for the Bakersfield Condors, a very good young prospect. But
but he's a young NHL defense, a young player who's trying to crack it. You know, like, you got to get some established puck movers, some guys that can sort out the defensive woes that have plagued this team all season long. I mean, you watch the Oilers play defense. Sometimes it's like watching a Triple-A team. They're lost.
It's definitely a bottom five D core in the NHL. And after Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, it's not a very good forward group either. I mean, don't have a lot of offensive production after the big three. So the
after
Oilers,
those three, Darnell Nurse is their leading scorer.
Right, and you know that's a big reason why they're one of the bottom teams in the Western Conference. And the Oilers are certainly going to be one of the most fascinating teams to watch in the offseason, because not only do they not have a general manager right now, they don't have a coach, and the expectation is that whoever comes in as the general manager is going to make some pretty significant moves. Hopefully they just don't trade a number one overall pick. You're listening to NHL This Week. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Kevin Woodley.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Quinn Hughes makes a quick dash down the near side. Takes the puck behind the net, banks it to himself. Out the near side, Hughes shoots, stopped by Quick. Rebound, they score! Brock Besser! And they're going to have to grab that puck as well, because Quinn Hughes has his first point in the NHL.
Welcome back to NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor, let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Kevin Woodley of NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys.
All right, Kev, we got to start off with Thatcher Demko. He picked up the win last night, a big 4-2 win for the Vancouver Canucks. Obviously, you know, the Canucks are not going to the playoffs this year, but nonetheless, a big win for the Canucks and Demko. In his last two starts for the Canucks, he has 70 saves and both wins, of course. Five career wins now for Thatcher Demko. In your opinion, is he ready to take that next step and become a full-time goaltender for the Canucks?
Yeah, I mean, full-time goaltender, but in what role? I would hesitate to say it's any more than a backup pushing for more time if he plays well. Like, we're certainly not into he's ready to carry the mail or be a number one guy. I'm not saying he can't, but having watched obviously all these games that he's played so far, my inclination is there are still steps beyond just experience that need to be taken. So, he's ready to be a full-time NHLer. That's why they traded Anders Nilsson and brought him up here. He stubbed his toe in a couple of his outings, but he's a diligent guy who works hard with their new goalie coach, working here again, Ian Clark, to sort of tighten up the areas that they've identified as, you know, as needing some work. So, I think he'll get there. I think he's ready to play more, and that's going to be the process. You know, don't just be the guy who starts the back end of back-to-backs. Earn more starts. See if you can get up 25 or higher. Push Jacob Markstrom for more starts, and then push for harder starts. Not just, you know, again, just not just the second end of back-to-backs. Not just, against lesser teams, but push for tougher competition. Kind of much like the process we saw Corey Schneider go through here when Roberto Luongo was here, except, you know, if you're 23 and Thatcher Demko, you don't want to wait as long as Corey had to.
Kevin, I'm curious, how great of a test of mental fortitude is it for a guy like Eric Comrie, who gets his first start of the year last night after playing tremendously throughout the season in the AHL, goes into Minnesota and has as nightmare of an NHL debut this season as you can ask for. A 5-1 loss, but regardless of the score, you know, the first goal gets launched into the air, hits him in the name bar, bounces in. He lets in two goals from awful angles. I mean, how big of a test is this for this young netminder moving forward, for a guy who, you know, for all intents and purposes, has to go back to the minors in the AHL and get ready for a playoff run?
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy, right? Like, that's, you know, some of those bounces and some uncharacteristic goals. And, you know, I think we talked about Demko being ready to be here. the difference is he arrives and the job is there and he knows he's going to get to play. And so unlike Eric, who keeps getting these spot starts here and there, like, hey, come up, show us what you get. Like, there's just added pressure, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he knows he's not staying. So it's your one chance to leave an impression. And you get that bad bounce. And, hey, listen, this is the mental part of it is this is part of the challenge of the gig. It's not easy. But I think it's easier when you come up knowing that you're going to get a run, that you're not putting all that pressure on one start. And when things go wrong, that just adds even more pressure to it. I think he's ready to be an NHL backup as well. Talking to people that have watched him in the American League, it's tough when you're just getting to do it in a start here and a start there. I think if you put him in a situation where, you know, he knows he's there, not that the pressure ever completely disappears, but that he knows he's going to get a run of games as opposed to spot starts, I think you'll see some of that tension maybe come out of his game and he'll be the guy that you've seen in the minor leagues, the guy that, you know, frankly, I've been big on for a number of years here. The guy that I had an NHL goalie coach tell me 3 years ago in his rookie season that he could come into the NHL and probably be the best goalie along the ice in the entire league. Like, clearly there are some other, you know, in terms of upstairs and patience for a smaller goaltender that some people will want to pick apart. But he has the skill set. He has the tools. He now has the experience. He's ready for a bigger role. Doesn't look like it happens there, but he's certainly ready for it. And I would imagine there are other teams that would be willing to give him that shot next season.
And I was happy to know that we were having you on, because when we were watching that game and the third goal goes in, the Victor Rask goal from, you know, a not very great angle, and he kind of looks to the heavens, you know, in frustration. He shows that outward frustration. As you know, as a young goaltender trying to cut your teeth in the NHL, are you allowed to show that? Is it bad form for a young goalie to kind of maybe show that outward frustration?
The frustration's with himself. If you're demonstrating it at teammates, that might be different. But I know Eric a little bit, actually pretty well. I've been on the ice with him in the summers. And, you know, if there's one thing I wouldn't say worry about, but one thing that he has to get past, it's that he's pretty hard on himself. He's really hard on himself. And so, I don't know, having not watched it, obviously I was covering a Canucks game last night. I saw some of the highlights. I didn't see that replay in terms of, you know, whatever he expressed. But I think we're talking about the dead angle goal that goes in off the side of his chest,
yeah.
I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. And you know, and he goes traditional VH there, which I don't even know if that's typical of him. And just puck finds a seam. So probably frustration with self. If he was looking at teammates or blaming other people, that would be worse. But the pressure he puts on himself, and you talk about the maturity and being able to sort of handle these limited opportunities and the extra pressure that comes with him, like, getting past that and not beating yourself up is part of this for him. And so, you know, if there's some frustration there, if you're going to express it, you have to then be able to channel it and put it away pretty quick. And again, easier said than done when you know it's a one-game debut and this is it. And you can't take that back and there's nothing you can do, but you're not going to get another opportunity probably this year, right? And that's all sitting in the back of your mind, and that makes it that much tougher.
We're joined by Kevin Woodley of NHL.com and In Goal Magazine on NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. And Kevin, we want to get back to the Canucks, but we have to ask you about Darcy Kuemper, just a completely, you know, unfortunate incident that happened in the game last night against the LA Kings. Trevor Lewis's stick gets up and Darcy Kuemper is forced to leave the game. And I think you'd agree, Kuemper has been one of the best stories in the NHL this year. 21 straight starts, .924 save percentage. Really, you could say that, you know, Kuemper has been largely responsible for the Coyotes being in the playoff race right now. I guess, what were your thoughts when you saw that? Obviously, you know, Kemper's health is the most important right now.
Yeah, it sounds like you know, he wasn't on the ice today, and the Coyotes expect to have an announcement tomorrow morning in terms of his availability and update on his status. You know, I've said this for years. I don't think it's going to change, but I know there are people at the NHL that would like to change the openings on the masks in terms of the goaltenders and the cat-eye cages. I don't think, you know, the goalie union is going to fight that hard because these guys are going to prioritize sight lines and the ability to see. Clearly, anything that limits that hurts their ability to perform, and they're willing to, much like a player, not wanting to wear a visor or you know, sort of having that grandfathered in, the older guys. They don't want anything that's going to limit vision in a position where that's the most important thing, the ability to find and see pucks. What makes that one a little unique is it didn't go through, and I've always argued the fact that a stick blade will go through a cat eye. We've seen these incidents before where there's cuts and there's blood and guys need stitches. And outside of, I think, Rick DiPietro with the Islanders, Sidney Crosby backhand follow through that scratched his cornea, we haven't seen any serious eye injuries yet. And knock on wood, this isn't the first one. But I wonder if that's what it'll take before the NHL does step in and change that opening on the cat eye and make it smaller, or you know, force something that's a little more like CSA approved, for lack of a better term, right? You can't buy these. You're not supposed to be able to buy these cages in Canada because the stick blade fits through. What makes Kempers a little even more unfortunate, if it wasn't even the main sort of the big holes that you sort of see through, it was the gap underneath them, and there really is no reason not to have a second metal bar in between those two bottom bars below your eyesight. It's not going to, or below your eye, it's not going to change your vision. It's pretty rare that a stick goes through there, but the fact it's capable, you know, to me says there are cages out there that prevent that. And, you know, if I'm another NHL team and I look and my guy's got the one that Darcy had on and I know there's an option that prevents that, I'm switching them out pretty quick.
Kevin, I want to ask you about Jordan Binnington, and obviously an absolutely phenomenal start to his NHL career, but can he ride this play into the playoffs, or is it a new game and is he going to have to kind of relearn a different style of play and, you know, a greater level of intensity once, you know, the records are reset and the postseason begins?
I mean, I don't think a different style of play unless they let that much. I mean, we know in the playoffs that more is let go, right? So, but if anything, that usually favors a tighter defensive game. Does it get a little tougher around the net? Do you have to fight through a few more things in your crease in the playoffs that other teams get away with because the whistle goes away in the postseason? Maybe, but I'll be honest, I'm just in the process of charting his season for my NHL playoff preview project, and I've already watched two goals that, frankly, I think they should have challenged because they would have been disallowed because he gets shoved out of the way. So I don't know that much changes. If the intensity goes up, like, you know, you guys have probably seen some of the same internet the clips where somebody asks him, you know, about the pressure, and he responds by saying, "Do I look nervous?" Okay, there you go. Like, things like this kid doesn't seem to get rattled by much. So, the intensity goes up, the spotlight goes up, the focus goes up. But everything that we've seen so far says he's got the mentality to handle that. And I don't think you have to change your game. But the only thing that's going to change now is the intensity of the focus of the pre-scout. Like, teams are going to, and this is kind of what I'm doing for NHL.com to a lesser degree, but the opposing goalie coach is going to take a look at footage and watch every goal and watch all the highlights and try and find trends or aspects of his game that they think they can exploit if they can create certain types of opportunities, particularly on a power play where you have a man advantage. And that might be the one thing that changes in the playoffs. If they spot a weakness that they think they can take advantage of, they're going to target it. You know, I'm early. I'm like 10 games into a season doing the video charting myself, and he seems to play a really neutral game. To me, the goalies that are easiest to target are goalies that play to extremes. Marc-Andre Fleury, with his hyper-aggression last year, as much as it worked through three rounds and as good as he's been in Vegas, the Washington Capitals absolutely tore it apart with lateral plays in the Stanley Cup final and basically won a cup because of their ability to do so. Goalies that play on one end or the other of an extreme are sort of easier to find trends that you can exploit against. You still have to create those types of chances, and the other team has something to say about that. But when I look at Binnington's game, I don't see a lot of extremes. I see a pretty sort of neutral, tight, technical, reads the play well, doesn't get himself splayed out and opened up, moves into pucks off the release. Like, there's a really nice balance to his game. So I don't know that it's going to be that easy to find things to exploit. And Now, I guess the only thing that could change is whether he folds under the pressure of the playoffs. But like I said, there's nothing we've seen so far that leads you to believe that's going to be the case.
Kevin Woodley of NHL.com and In Goal Magazine joins us on NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. And Kevin, Quinn Hughes, Vancouver Canucks, 2018 first-round pick. He's gone into three games now, and he picked up his first career assist on that goal by Brock Besser. We played the clip coming out of the break. This has obviously been, you know, a long year for the Canucks. I think you'd agree, though, that Travis Green has done a really nice job with this Canucks team. They've been competitive on a nightly basis. But if you're a Canucks fan and you're looking for, you know, a ray of sunshine at the end of the season, does it come in the form of Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, and Brock Besser?
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, I mean, it's not just this year, guys, right? Like we're keenly aware of it in this market. This is the worst team in hockey over the past four seasons combined. With Arizona now flirting with a playoff spot, you know, they were the only team that worst over the previous 3 years, and they passed them this year. So this has been a pretty long dry spell, and there are positives for sure. Elias Pettersson should win the Rookie of the Year. Again, it may take away my goalie union card because Binnington's had a hell of a season, but I think Pettersson and the numbers he's put up in the start he had probably trumps that. Hughes has added, you know, he's an exceptional skater. He's fun to watch. That assist that you guys played on the Besser goal, like that was a beer league move he pulled to lose his check behind the net. Like in your first NHL game, to add full speed stop and bank the puck off the back of the net to lose your check and then walk out the other side, get a good shot off, and Besser scores on the rebound. Yeah, people lost their mind. It was fun to watch. He's fun to watch. Yet he's not that big. There are going to be lessons to be learned defensively. Travis is trying to, as a coach, allow these guys some freedom offensively, but also, as he talks about a lot, you know, find guys that he can win with. And a lot of time that means guys that can defend. So we've seen other young, talented players that I think fans would like to see more of, like the Nikolai Godolbins of the world. You know, there were times he was their fourth leading scorer in a healthy scratch, and he's been a healthy scratch down the stretch here and doesn't look like he has much of a future with this team. So there are positives. There are bright spots, and after 4 years of drudgery, the fan base is excited for those things, for the Petterssons, for the Bessers, for the Hughes. But the reality is they need more. They need a lot more. And when you look at the farm, there doesn't seem to be much more coming. Like, all the promise and all the future's here right now. So outside of whatever pick they get, hopefully for them in the top 10 this year, unless the lottery balls bounce against them, you know, again and they drop, you know, the prospects they had haven't all hit. It's been a bad year on the farm. There are other bad teams that at least have their farm team doing well. Utica's in tough. Young kids haven't developed down there. So, it's exciting right now to watch these guys, but there's certainly, you know, there's a critical grain of salt amongst sort of the local media that are watching this closely, because just because you made a step from 69 points to 80 points this year doesn't guarantee it's going to be another 10 next year. The other thing is they've been Markstrom's been incredible, like proven himself as a number one goalie this year, and had, you know, just a really great year. Based on goals saved above average and some proprietary numbers I've looked at, he's like 27, 28 goals he's saved when you account for shot quality, courtesy of ClearSight Analytics, Steve Valiquette's company. You know, that's like arguably 9, 10 wins. They have one more regulation and overtime win than the Ottawa Senators. So, yes, exciting pieces, fun to watch, dynamic offensive players, but a team that I think, despite those things, is still a long ways away. Yeah, they stayed in the playoff hunt longer this year, but realistically, they're still a long ways from being a really good team, and it's going to be a real crucial summer with lots of cap space to see how they manage this next step.
Kevin Woodley covers the Vancouver Canucks for NHL.com, and he covers the world of goaltending for In Goal Magazine. Check out the most recent In Goal podcast featuring an interview with Ryan Miller. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Perfect. Thanks, guys, for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Right. Have a good night. Right, let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Hart Trophy race. Most people think Nikita Kucherov has got it wrapped up. I don't know if I think he's got it wrapped up. I think there's a couple of players that I would say are nipping on his heels. I think one of them is named Sidney Crosby. You're listening to NHL This Week. Who's going to win the Hart Trophy this year, Sean?
I'm at a crossroads.
Welcome back to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN Radio 1290. This segment, we're talking about the Hart Trophy. Nikita Kucherov, Mr. 125 points with two games to go, seems to have it locked up. But then you look at what Patrick Kane has been doing lately. He's up to 106 points. Picked up another point tonight in that win over the St. Louis Blues. Connor McDavid, second place in the NHL with 115 points. You've got Leon Draisaitl, fourth. You've got six players now, Shawnee. Five players, pardon me, at 100 points. Nathan MacKinnon's at 97, so he has a shot to get to 100 points. I think most people, Sean, agree that Nikita Kucherov is the front runner for the Hart Trophy, and then most people have Johnny Gaudreau as one of the finalists, and then, you know, throw whoever else you want in there. Brad Marchand picked up a point in that win for the Bruins yesterday. He's up to 100 points for the first time in his career. One guy that I don't think is mentioned enough, and I mentioned his name, three-time Stanley Cup winner before the break, Sidney Crosby. And the reason why I think Crosby doesn't get enough credit and enough consideration for the Hart Trophy is you got to look at who he's playing with. And, you know, Jake Guentzel is a great hockey player, a great goal scorer. But, you know, right now he's playing with Jared McCann, a natural center on his wing. And, you know, he's played with, you know, Brian Rust before. He's played with Dominic Simone. I mean, you look at Crosby and what he's been able to do. Crosby, by the way, is at 95 points. And you wonder why more people aren't talking about Sidney Crosby as being a Hart Trophy finalist. I think people would say, oh yeah, sure, Crosby's still a top five player, at the very least top 10 player in the league. So going back to what I was asking before, is Nikita Kucherov the front runner for the Hart Trophy? Because last year we know that it was a much closer race with Nathan MacKinnon and Anje Kopitar, and then obviously Taylor Hall of the Devils ended up winning it. But right now, Shawnee, who are your three finalists for the Hart Trophy? Because as far as I'm concerned, it's not just Nikita Kucherov and then the rest of the entire league, because I think it's a lot closer than some people think.
I just looking at, you know, the points and where all these teams are at, I right now, just because he is running away with it, I feel Kucherov is the front runner to win the trophy. I mean, you look at the season he's had, it's been historic in Tampa. He's just shattering team records, and his play is otherworldly sometimes. The plays he makes, the way he sees the ice, he's a puck passer, he's a shooter, he's an all-around player. He's a tremendous player, but I really... My three, I have Kucherov winning it. I have him taking it. He's going to win it, in my opinion. But I really like Patrick Kane. I thought what he's been able to do this season has been incredible.
Is this the part of the show where we have to ask, can a player be a finalist for the Hart Trophy if his team isn't going to make the playoffs?
I think
can we finally stop talking about that?
You're done with that discussion?
I mean, it's regular season awards here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Connor McDavid, as far as I'm concerned, should absolutely be a Hart Trophy finalist. For me, it's Kucherov, Crosby, and McDavid. Those are the three best players in the league. That's who I would have. And that's nothing against Johnny Gaudreau. You know, that's nothing against Brad Marchand. I think Brad Marchand also deserves a lot of consideration for the Hart Trophy. And that's what I'm saying. I think Nikita Kucherov will ultimately win the Hart Trophy because he's at, as we talked about, 125-plus points. I mean, it's been a long time.
He could get 130.
Well, he could hit 130, and already at 125, I mean, we just don't see players put up those types of numbers. We don't see, you know, Connor McDavid type of numbers at 115 even. But when you look at some of the other players and some of the seasons they've put together, I really think that Sidney Crosby, Patrick Kane, Brad Marchand, they deserve just as much consideration as Nikita Kucherov and Johnny Gaudreau and Nathan MacKinnon. And that's why I wanted to talk about it this segment here.
I like Nathan MacKinnon as a pick.
Well, I mean, he was a finalist last year.
And
I mean, he's at 97 points now.
And down this home stretch, I mean, they've needed wins, they've needed points, and their captain, Gabe Landeskog, goes out for a little bit of time as well. He puts the team on his back. I mean, he's a stud.
And it's not just about points, right? I mean, we're going over all these point totals.
It's about team success.
It's about team success. And you look at the Chicago Blackhawks, and you know, we've talked about them a lot because they did the Jets a favor tonight by beating the Blues in overtime, pardon me, in the shootout. But you know, Patrick Kane and Johnny Taves, you know, from the 20 game mark on, you know, right around when Joel Quenneville was fired, I forget exactly when it was, but it was around 20 games. And you look at what Kane has done all year long. It's not like Kane has just been good the last 10 or 20 games. I mean, he's been good the majority of the season, with the exception of maybe a little bit of the beginning part of the season. But, you know, 106 points.
And also going through a coaching change.
That's incredible.
Like you mentioned, a coaching change with as polar opposite philosophies as you can handle. You know, Joel Quenneville leaving the old school mentality that has been in the is part of the Blackhawks system for a number of years now. And then you bring in Jeremy Colleton, this young, new, kind of new age style where he pushes the offensive game. And, you know, throughout all the adjustments and throughout all the lessons and learning, Patrick Kane continues to dominate. And they almost did it. You know, they almost pushed their way to a playoff spot. But here we are, and now we're talking back to whether the team made it to the playoffs or not.
And Shawnee, I think we're going to be talking about this until the finalists for these awards are announced. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned before, I do think that Nikita Kucherov will end up winning the Hart Trophy. And at the very least, he's going to be a finalist for the Hart Trophy. I just wanted to bring it up, as I mentioned, because I do think that players like Patrick Kane, Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, Brad Marchand, Nathan MacKinnon, those types of players, I think, deserve to be talked about and should be given more of a chance to be a finalist. Whether or not McDavid and Kane are going to the playoffs, they still have to be talked about as the most valuable players in the entire league. Not just the best players, but the most valuable players to their teams. I think there's a really good shot that this race is going to be a lot closer than people think, even though there's probably no doubt in many people's mind that it is going to be Kucherov's trophy this year.
I agree.
We've got one final segment to go. You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
And the Canadians start again. A long pass from Petrie for Brendan Gallagher. Gallagher broken up by Staal. Here they come, and Svechnikov is shot. Scores! Hey, hey, what do you say? Wins it in overtime.
That's our boy John Forslund, Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster, with the Evgeny Svechnikov overtime goal call. That was against the Montreal Canadiens. The Carolina Hurricanes looking to get back into the playoffs for the first time in a very long time. This final segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. This weekend, Chad Daniels is performing at Rumors. Chad has performed on The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien, and his four comedy albums have over 700 million streams. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Shawnee, we've got about three and a half minutes left here. I want to talk about these playoff races, and we have to recap tonight's action. Only three games in the NHL tonight, and the one game that really has an impact on the playoff standings here, and it's the Central Division. The St. Louis Blues losing to the Chicago Blackhawks by a score of 4-3 in the shootout. The Blues now sit at 95 points, third in the Central Division, behind the Winnipeg Jets and the Nashville Predators, both with 96 points. The Jets have the tiebreaker with 44 regulation wins. So the Central right now is the Winnipeg Jets number one, Nashville Predators in second, and the St. Louis Blues in third. The remaining games, the Jets, of course, against the Colorado Avalanche tomorrow night, and then they've got the Arizona Coyotes Saturday. The last day of the regular season is Saturday, so it'd be weird if they played on Sunday. The Nashville Predators have Vancouver tomorrow, and then they've got the Blackhawks Saturday. The Blues had the game in hand, but obviously they don't anymore because they played the Blackhawks tonight and lost. They've got the Philadelphia Flyers tomorrow, and then the Vancouver Canucks on Saturday. So both St. Louis and Nashville play Vancouver. So the Jets are hoping that the Canucks are able to beat the Predators tomorrow, and then a win against the Colorado Avalanche would mean that the Winnipeg Jets would not have to worry about Nashville catching them, right? Because the Jets would be at 98 points, and the most that Nashville could get to is 98 points.
They have the tiebreaker.
But the Jets have the tiebreaker. Now, as far as the St. Louis Blues go, it's going to be very tough for them to catch the Jets. They essentially need the Jets to lose out, and then they would have to win out because the Blues would be at 99 points. I should say, if the Jets win one of the games and the Blues win their two games, so they actually don't need the Jets to lose out. If they win out, they would be at 99 points and the Jets would be at 98 points. So the Blues, in theory, can leapfrog both the Jets and the Predators, but the Jets, at the end of the day, Shawnee, just have to take care of business, don't they?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And for a team that prides itself on, you know, its ability to score goals and its ability to create offense and swarm teams, I mean, we need to see that style of play that was so prominent in the first half of the season. You know, the Jets need to find that form again. They need to take care of business, get 2 points, secure home ice for the playoffs, and fire up this postseason already.
And Shawnee, just quickly, looking over at the Eastern Conference and that wild card race, the Pittsburgh Penguins have still not clinched a playoff spot. They sit third in the Metro Division with 97 points. The Carolina Hurricanes, in that first wild card spot, sit at 95 points. They obviously did not play tonight. Neither did Pittsburgh, Columbus, or Montreal. But Carolina is sitting at 95 points. Columbus and Montreal both have 94 points. Columbus has the tiebreaker with 3 more regulation wins. Columbus has the New York Rangers and the Ottawa Senators. The Habs have the Washington Capitals and the Toronto Maple Leafs. So Columbus has much easier matchups. Friday is the game against the Rangers. The Canadiens play the Washington Capitals tomorrow. A must win for the Montreal Canadiens. If they lose that game, it's going to be very difficult for them to make the playoffs. So the Eastern Conference wildcard race and the Central Division are what we're going to be watching in the last 3 days of the regular season. That's going to do it for us tonight on a late night edition of NHL This Week. Big thanks to all of our guests, Scott Billick of NHL.com and NBC Pro Hockey Talk. AJ Haefeli of BSNDenver.com joined us. Kevin Woodley of NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. Thanks to all of our sponsors, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and Linden Market Dental Center. Join us on Saturday for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks for listening tonight.